Ladies and gentlemen, the third general session of the California Council of the Blind 2018 Conference and Convention is now in session. Woo! We are going to begin this afternoon with a wonderful privilege. Joining us is no stranger to the disability community or to anyone who's familiar with California politics. He served at all levels of state government, including as the Senate President, State Senate President. He's been vital in terms of issues of mental health and other disabilities. I would like you now to welcome the Honorable Daryl Steinberg, Mayor of the City of Sacramento.
Can I borrow the mic?
Absolutely.
Is that okay?
Testing. Good afternoon, everyone. Judy, thank you so much for the warm introduction and for your leadership. Congratulations on being reelected last night as the president of the California Council for the Blind. Of the Blind. No, that's okay. You're welcome to correct anything that I say. I'm very, very happy to be with you today and to help open up this session and to reflect a little bit on, if you allow me, on my own career and my own journey, because I got my start in politics. I got my start as an advocate when I was a law student at the University of California at Davis. And the law school's moot courtroom where we did all of our trial practice was not accessible to people in wheelchairs. And the law school said to all of us that they couldn't afford to make the change that needed to be made. And then they told us, well, we'll do it, but we'll do it at some point when we can find the money. And after several months of persisting and advocating, a number of my fellow students and I went across the street to visit the university's assistant chancellor in charge of facilities and asked, when might our moot courtroom be made accessible to people with disabilities? And the answer was, I don't know what you're talking about. We offered the law school the money months ago, and they refused to accept it because they didn't want to change the look of the courtroom. I said, did they happen to put that in writing? They said, yes. I said, would you mind if I borrowed a copy of the letter? We had that letter word for word on the front page of the paper within days, and that courtroom was built accessible within months. And it was that moment and a subsequent chapter where one of my best friends in law school, Jim Maloney, who was born blind, I don't know if any of you know Jim. You guys know Jim? Oh my God. One of my dear friends, great sports fan. When Jim Maloney was denied reasonable accommodation when taking the California bar exam. And you know, Jim took the bar exam 7 times. Talk about persistence. He passed. And if he had been given the appropriate accommodation, not advantage, but just accommodation, no doubt he would have been spared many years of stress, having to do what many of us were able to do in one or two times. It was those experiences that showed me the connection between advocacy and standing up for what's right and the ability to make social change. And so this week, if you allow me just to digress one more moment, in Sacramento, we have made national news because of an officer-involved shooting of a young, unarmed African-American man who died. And the persistent and consistent and right call has been, you don't understand the plight of young African-American men unless you step and stand in their shoes. And isn't that true of the battles you are fighting today in California to end the stereotyping of people who are blind? To recognize, to make people recognize that disability is only one aspect of your lives, that the flip side of disability is in fact ability, and that the unacceptable underemployment rate among people with disabilities has to be a higher priority in our state and in our country. So yes, your call for higher Social Security disability benefits for people who are blind is absolutely correct. But as compelling and as important is your call for greater access to public libraries, greater access to employment, greater access to mainstream employment, greater recognition that you can do most anything that anybody else can do who happens to be sighted. And I also know that an issue that may not seem related to your cause and the work that you seek to do together is the issue of mental health and mental illness. But the truth of the matter is that when you have to overcome not just your own disabilities in terms of obstacle, but society's stereotypes and all the obstacles that are put in your way of achieving your dreams by others, that the issue of depression, the issue of mental health, the issues that we don't talk enough about are very real. We are working very hard in the state of California to make depression and mental health the top-tier public health issue that it must be. For too long, mental health has been relegated as the secondary issue. It's second to homelessness. It's second to criminal justice. It's second to why kids fall behind in school. It's second to why people who sometimes are struggling for other reasons continue to struggle. It's time that we lift the brain and relief for people who suffer needlessly to a higher priority in our state. That's your issue, as much as it's anybody else's issue. And together we can make that better. You know, the Americans with Disabilities Act and the state counterpart, which I was privileged to author when I was a member of the state assembly, when you think about it, they are essential civil rights laws, but they're really just the beginning. They're just foundations. without physical access, you don't even get a chance. But physical access is not enough. Physical access has to be combined with changing hearts and minds of people who might look at you and say, I don't know. I'm afraid to hire you. I don't know how to look at you. What the work that you are doing and your work in the Capitol is absolutely vital to change those attitudes and thus change the reality for all people who live with one form of disability or another. I'm not sure, you know, we go through, I know in the mental health world, we go through a lot of attempts at name changes. Should it be behavioral health? Should it be brain health? Is mental health the right term? I sure would love the disability movement, and I'm sure you do think about this, to think about how to take that second part of that word, ability, and find a way to separate it out, to lift it up, and to make it the mantra and the goal of everything that you are doing on behalf of others. Thank you so much for having me today. I wish you nothing but the best.
Mr. Mayor, we are doubly pleased that you're here with us, given the stress that's going on in the city right now. We are just doubly honored to have you. Thank you so much. I told the mayor before he started speaking that in addition to the people in this room, he was being heard throughout the hotel, throughout the state, throughout the country, and parts of the world on ACB Radio. Hello there, ACB Radio. I did promise a door prize. And so we're looking for some cash. Can you give me some cash and tell me what chapter it's from?
It's from Bayview. Chapter.
Bayview, $25 cash.
So we have a C's.
Not yet. We'll do this one first.
Okay.
I need the raffle. Oh, I should have had the mayor stay and draw the name, but.
Okay. No problem.
You tell me the name.
Jeff Tom.
Just hand it to him. He's right here. Jeff? Jeff? Raise your hand. We may have, depending on how the afternoon goes, but I only promised one, and I deliver on my promises. We're not going to do that right now. Okay. You know, we are really fortunate this afternoon. Thank God no California team is in the final eight, or our next visitor might not be here. From the Department of Rehabilitation, a gentleman who is no stranger to this organization, I'm delighted to welcome Joe Xavier.
On?
You got there. You go.
It
Joe.
Is on. Ooh.
Yay.
All right. So First of all, good afternoon to everyone. Glad to see that everybody had a lunch. It's all nice and cheery, and we want to get through our presentation before that afternoon siesta. So let me start with first acknowledging and thanking you guys for inviting us to be here today to share some updates with you. And I certainly, I don't know if the mayor stepped out of the room, but I certainly want to echo many of his comments. It is not an easy feat to follow the mayor because he's always very articulate and right on with his perspective and position on the issues. So for all of you that travel from around the state to be here, thank you for doing that. I think it's very important to the cause of blindness around the state, to CCB as a whole, but more importantly, to continue to move forward our programs and services. And Judy, congratulations on your election. And the rest of the members that were elected last night, thank you for your willingness to step up and lead, because these days, without leadership, we can't make the progress that we need to make. So there are a number of Department of Rehabilitation staff in the room. Certainly want to thank you, and I'm glad you guys are here. And then, of course, a number of our partners, and we cannot do the work that we're doing without the work that you do. I have today with me also Elena Gomez, who's our deputy for our specialized services, that I'll be turning this over to in a few minutes to provide you some program updates. And on the 22nd, it was National Rehabilitation Counselors Recognition Day. So hey, one big applause for counselors around the state.
We're 2 days too late, but we still thank them.
So I would be very remiss if I didn't remind everyone that last year's baseball world champions were the Houston Astros. I hear some grumbling in the room. So one of the things that I wanted to do today is to share with you what are some of the landscape, what are some of the forces that we have today as we look at our programs and services here in California and, frankly, what's taking place across the country. And Elena will provide you with some program updates more specific to our blindness programs within the division. And, of course, time permitting, we're always open to a question or two. So what are the landscape, what are the key considerations that we face as we administer the VR program here in California? First of all, the mayor spoke to this already, the unemployment rate of people who are blind or visually impaired, the fact that some 70% remain unemployed, and about only 20% that are eligible to participate in the labor workforce are doing so. And we know that the next reauthorization of the Rehab Act is going to very much be shaped by what we have, are, and will be doing with the changes that have been put forth by Congress in the current reauthorization. We know that Congress has demanded of all workforce systems, including VR, that we have a much greater impact on the populations that we're serving. The short version of that is more people with disabilities, more people who are blind and visually impaired need to go to work. I mean, that's just, Congress could not be more clear about that demand on us. And the other reality that we face is that none of our systems have enough capacity to meet the demand. So the state is also now faced with a common workforce measurement system. So the Department of Rehabilitation is going to be measured in the same way as the one-stops, community colleges, the Wagner-Pizer programs, et cetera. Now, I'm all for sharing that same common end result, which is a living wage for everyone. But the reality is that people with disabilities start in a very different place and have a much longer road in some cases to attain that employment. So we're very vigilant of that because we don't want to have measures that simply work on the outcome without realizing what it takes to become employed. And we certainly know that this is an era where reduction in resources is not off the table. Although our federal budget was kind to us, the next conversation could be a different thing. So speaking of funding, We know that we, as of yesterday, we have the federal budget in place for the first time in this fiscal year. So we will actually have a federal budget that runs through the end of September. As of right now, we don't know of any reduction in grants. In fact, the supported employment grant that had been unfunded was funded, although not at the full amount. But when you're at zero, anything from there up is good. So we'll take it, even if it wasn't the full complement that it was getting, because it takes the pressure off of the other funding so that we can use that as well. We also know that under the current Rehab Act, we need to set aside 15% for the student services. And frankly, it's a mandate of 15% and much more likely to be closer to 20 or maybe even 25% of our federal award that is spent specifically on student services. Now, what does that mean when we say that? What it truly means at the end of the day is that in addition to students getting services much earlier, so they can go to work, and Elena will talk specifically about blind, visually impaired here in a minute, it means that we are now having to right-size the volume of services in our adult population. Because remember, if you remove 15 or 20% from there, you can't continue to do what we have been doing and in the way that we've been doing it. So when we talk about resources, which is an ongoing conversation, particularly in my position, I've never met someone who doesn't say, Joe, we need more resources. Okay, and I don't say that lightly because people truly do need more resources. But when we think about resources, we think about getting them in three different ways. One is to obviously secure more money. And any chance that we get, we do pursue more funding. In the last 4 years, we were able to bring $64 million into our budget that we did not have. And so we'll take it. The other thing that we can do to improve on our resources is to leverage the partnerships so that we can leverage the resources that they can bring to the table. And, of course, another avenue of looking at resources is to reduce the demand on the resources that we have. The reality is that in today's environment, we need to be doing all three. We need to be looking at how do we get more money, we need to look at how we improve partnerships, and we need to look at how we serve the greatest number of people with the amount of dollars that we have. It's doing the greatest good for the greatest number. And that's not an easy feat, but it is part of the landscape that we face these days. I wanted to briefly touch on prior approval, a number you may have heard about this. And so prior approval essentially says that RSA now needs to approve certain expenditures if they qualify. So, for example, a package of equipment that exceeds $5,000, before we can buy that, it now requires prior approval of RSA. But prior approval is not something that is new. It's been around since the mid-90s, but what had been in place since the mid-90s was a waiver for the vocational rehabilitation programs. Now, the waiver was lifted at the end of 2014, and what we did is to write to Secretary DeVos last fall and request that she reinstitute that waiver. Because the impact of having that waiver in place is that it adds yet another layer and it pulls resources away from providing services to meet this added demand of documentation, of a process of approvals, and what it results in is slower process of being able to procure the goods and services that we need. I also want you to be aware that the Congress, even though the reauthorization is not yet a conversation, has already authorized or requested that the Government Accounting Office conduct a study of how vocational programs across the country are implementing student services and how vocational rehabilitation programs are engaging the business community. That study has been underway, and a number of forums were conducted around the country, some here in California. I've had an opportunity to inform those conversations. And we expect the GAO will issue a report later this summer. The other thing I wanted to touch on is the state price schedule. Now, it's certainly not a perfect tool, but it is integral to ensuring that we're buying the goods and services that we need, both for consumers and for reasonable accommodations in a timely fashion. It certainly has been a topic of interest to the Blind Advisory Committee and certainly to the CCB and the membership. So what I wanted to share with you is that it does expire at the end of June, and that we are working with our partners at the Department of General Services to ensure that we have either the state price schedule or a better tool in place to continue to meet that need of getting timely goods and services. One of the things that the state has to do every couple of years is a risk assessment. So we essentially look at our organization and say, what are the top risks that we face in our organization? And one of the top risks that we identified under the current assessment is that having key leadership positions staffed with people with disabilities. Now, before I get into some of that, what I wanted to point out is the Department of Rehabilitation has 33% of our workforce self-identify as having a disability. 40% of them are in leadership roles. But the risk that we face is, in key leadership positions, whether it's my position or Elena's position or our blind field services deputy or any of those other key positions that we have, that we really want to be staffed with individuals who have lived experience with a disability, that we are very concerned that those individuals are not there and or are not ready to assume that role. So we're very much embarking over this year and next year on how we address that. And that definitely is something that we would welcome insights from you on how we can better address that and ensure that we have people with disabilities ready to step into these key leadership roles. The other thing that I'll mention, and then I'll turn this over to Elena, is we recently sent out a notice that that your leadership would have received, and it's for the grant solicitation manual. And what that manual is for providing grants such as your older individuals who are blind. It lays out the process that we'll go through to conduct a solicitation for those grants. Now, what we want to do is ensure that the grant competition process is both responsive and meeting the needs of the public, of the communities that we're serving, and of all interested parties. So there is a public forum that will be held on the 4th of April, and the input on that manual is due by April 11th. So I would very much encourage you to take a look at that manual and to offer us your insights on how we can improve what the process that we're using to solicit applications, proposals, and the process by which we review those proposals, and who participates in the review of those proposals. So I'm going to stop here, turn this over to Elena for some division and program updates.
Okay, well, thank you, Joe, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elena Gomez, and I'm the Deputy Director for Specialized Service Division. And I just want to say, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and provide some information regarding activities within Specialized Service Division. Now, first of all, can you hear me loud and clear?
Yeah.
All right. Just double checking. Okay. I want to share first on a personal level that this is my fifth or seventh CCB conference. I have to admit, I look forward to hearing that round of applause. You know, it really makes me very warm, and, you know, it's very warm and welcoming. And I'm looking forward to my 10-year anniversary of attending the CCB.
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, I want to say that the work that we do cannot be done without the partnership of the Blind Advisory Committee. And I think we have a number of Blind Advisory Committee or BAC members in the audience. I see Deborah here. I don't know who else is in the room. We do have our CCB member, Mitch Pomerantz, is the chair of our Blind Advisory Committee. And I don't think he's here today.
He's not.
Oh, he's not. Thank you. Okay. But I still want to give a shout out to Mitch for his excellent leadership of the Blind Advisory Committee. And I think most of you are aware that the Blind Advisory Committee provides advice regarding the four blindness programs that we have within the division: Blind Field Services, the Orientation Center for the Blind, the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, and the Business Enterprises program. So I have to thank the BAP members for their time, service, a commitment to the committee to advance the employment of the blind and visually impaired in California. So thank you for that. Okay, so I also want to acknowledge and thank Blind Video Services staff who are here in the room with today for all of the work in implementing changes required under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA, which now governs the VR program. And the focus of WIOA, it's really on employment and also working in collaboration with the other workforce partners, as Joe mentioned, to assure that our consumers, including those who are blind and visually impaired, are prepared for the 21st century workforce. This includes providing early intervention services, otherwise known as student services, to students with disabilities who represent our future workforce. This also includes blind and visually impaired students. Now, while Homemaker under WIOA is no longer considered to be an employment outcome, we continue to provide independent living services as a pathway to employment. So to comply with the mandates of WIOA, Blind Field Services is developing a strategic plan. And part of the strategic plan, one part of the strategic plan, is to do outreach, more outreach to blind and visually impaired students, to provide student services to assure greater readiness and success in their participation in the VR program once they exit high school. And also to attend their IEP meetings when invited, because it gives them that earlier exposure to VR, particularly for their parents and family members who may not be aware of the potential and talent that their child may have to succeed in the world of work. Now, we also recognize that blindness is a low incident population, you know, particularly when you're talking about students with, you know, who are blind and visually impaired. And we also recognize that we also have adults who need VR services, especially those who acquire vision loss later in life or experience a change in their vision. So the other piece of the strategic plan is to do more outreach with our business partners to ensure that working adults who are in need of our services because they're in jeopardy of losing their jobs, that they're aware, along with their supervisors and managers, they're aware of the VR services that are available to maintain their employment so we don't see a move towards reliance on public benefits. And the Orientation Center for the Blind is also collaborating with Blind Field Services to strengthen training for individuals to be more better prepared for employment. They're providing vocational assessment, support, and work-based learning experiences to BFS consumers. And again, the emphasis is to really look at achieving personal independence. It's a pathway to employment. By the way, I want to take this moment to give a shout-out to the OCB alumni in the room. You know who you are, right? All right. Okay. So in summary, and I'm just going to paraphrase what Joe said, Congress, through WIOA, is really emphasizing four key points: that VR programs need to change and become a relevant 21st century program, performance and outcomes need to improve. We need more people with disabilities going to work, including those who are blind and visually impaired. And we also need to assure that whatever training we provide to our blind and visually impaired consumers, that they're in line with the needs of our employers so we can assure the successful outcome at the end. So WIOA really gives us a framework to change and to promote our program to other workforce partners and employers. So moving on to the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, I just want to share that funding continues to be stable, but we always recognize that more funding is always needed. So there's lots of conversations happening nationally here in the state and nationally to highlight the needs of older Americans. We all know we're not getting any younger, right? Okay. So I just want to commend CCB and ACB for all of the efforts to ensure that the attention remains on this need. Now, OIB just started a new grant cycle last October. That's going to continue for 5 years instead of the usual 3 years that we've been having. And we did this to ensure stability and longer-term funding for our OIB providers. Currently, we have 18 OIB providers providing services to 57 of the 58 counties here in California. The only county that's not being served is Inyo, and please don't hold me to this because I'm not that great with geography, but I believe Inyo is one of the more remote counties east of Kern.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Joe, for confirming that. All right, okay. So now regarding our last program, the Business Enterprise Program. Okay. I see we have a number of BEP vendors in the room. Okay. So BEP continues to be very active in looking for new locations, including military opportunities. We just added Edwards Air Force Base to our roster of contracts for our vendors. But I want to share that in seeking military opportunities, the BEP continues to assert the Randolph-Shepard priority for its blind vendors. DOR currently has 2 federal arbitrations filed against the military for not recognizing the priority. BEP also successfully submitted a proposal in January to the United States Marine Corps in collaboration with Arizona Rehab for a $750 million contract to operate 5 bases in California and 1 in Arizona. If awarded, it will be the largest award in the history of the Randolph-Shepard program.
Wow.
And just to let you know the scope of this contract, $750 million, that's even larger than the Department of Rehabilitation's budget. Sorry, Joe.
All right.
Okay. But I want to share that the opportunity to submit this proposal could have not been done without the collaboration of the selected vendors for this opportunity. They were a great team. They worked with us every step of the way for 1 year to ensure that we submitted a proposal on their behalf. So collaboration with the BEP vendors is very important to us. So I want to acknowledge the fact that the Randolph-Shepard Vendors of California is becoming active. So my thanks to Paul Patchy Jr., who's the president. I see Paul is a very popular guy. And I believe he also has Trista Kelly as the vice president, and I'm not sure if he's here in the room. But I just also want to acknowledge that Trista Kelly has been newly elected to the California Vendors Policy Committee, and I want to thank him for his time of service thus far. So what we shared, what I just shared now is just a snapshot regarding the various programs within division. So I don't know where we are in terms of time, but
we have
please
time for a couple of questions.
Dan,
what? I missed that.
Someone get a mic to Dan.
Okay.
Oh, this isn't karaoke, okay. I don't know who would answer this question, but I know that the employment partners that you have, such as State Personnel Board and EDD, I successfully tested out as an AGPA at a 99 score. I've been looking for state work for 4 years, and I've had people in offices in this state that have laughed behind my back. I've heard them take me to the conference room waiting for my interview. Who's that old guy? Ha 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 ha. Well, at least it's not blindness, right? But it's still a blind guy and an old guy trying to get work. And, you know, it's frustrating. So when I look at stupid things like LEAP, which is sort of a ghettoized way to pretend that you're hiring folks. It would seem like a good starting point would be to work on the LEAP certification and bolster it and help folks like me and other people who are encountering discrimination from the state itself. And that's these are suggestions. I'm not, you know. And there's been several groups that CCB have been involved in with coalitions like the NFB and other groups that have tried to talk to the directors. This is before you, Joe, so calm down.
Dan, could you get to your question?
Okay. Why can't we initiate a reasonable collaboration to put people back to work in terms of sitting down and having a luncheon for all the managers or all the SSGMIs or whatever they're called, and say, look, you got to counter this discrimination. You can't have this. That would be a big start. Thank you.
Okay, ooh, woke me up. Okay, so Dan, the short answer to that is yes, we are working on those kinds of initiatives. We have had a work group, and we're working with the Department of State Personnel Board as well as the California Human Resources Department. LEAP is one of those things that's on there, so know that that kind of work is underway, and certainly much more to be done.
Yes.
Thank you. One more question. No more questions?
I don't see any.
Okay. That doesn't mean there aren't questions, but people haven't thought of them yet. But we're going to let you off the. We can't have anybody here channeling Mitch, so we don't have any other really hard questions for you, Joe.
So,
except how are the Dodgers going to do, you know?
The Dodgers, well, that's another story. what Elena and I will be here for a short while following this, so if anybody has any questions, you just want to approach us, find us. We'll be here for a short while. And again, congratulations, Judy and team on being elected, and a great conference.
And thank you, Joe. We know you're on our side. We're going to take a few seconds to get redistributed. Is Senya in the room? Are you here? Could you, did I say it right? Could you come up, please? Are you here, Yesenia?
Yes.
Hi there. I'm going to just introduce you now. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not careful, next year, without your ever knowing it, your utility bills could skyrocket, because what's going to begin happening next year is a program where you're going to be charged depending on what time of the day you use your energy. And one of our sponsors at this year's convention is Energy Upgrade California. They are a generous sustaining sponsor, and they are sponsoring a number of our events, and I'm having trouble right this second finding them, but I will in a minute. But here to speak with us for the next few minutes is one of the representatives from Energy Upgrade California. We'd please welcome generous sponsor Yesenia Vargas, who's here to speak with us.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah. Say another word.
Hello?
There you go.
Okay. Just speak up if anyone can't hear me. But yes, I'm here on behalf of Energy Upgrade California.
Can you hear her? She needs a better mic.
Okay.
A little bit better.
I'm leaning in.
There
is that better?
You go. There you go.
Sorry, I'm a little shy. So I'm here on behalf of Energy Upgrade California. We're a statewide program.
Please be quiet.
We're a statewide program under the California Public Utilities Commission. So you're being billed by your local utilities. I think in this region it's PG&E for the most part. But we work with all the energy providers in the state. So SDG&E, SoCalGas, all of that. And What California has been moving to is time of use billing. If you work in commercial sector, agricultural industry, you're already automatically on that plan. It's been the law for the past couple of years. And in certain counties, especially in the Central Valley, where a lot more is coming from solar, and so you have to regulate time of use because you get higher production hours during, you know, when the sun is out, those places are already on time of use. But by 2019, the whole state will be on this program. And what this means is that the time you use your electricity is going to matter as much as how much electricity you use. That doesn't mean that your bill is necessarily going to go up, however. If you have electric vehicles, if you have medical equipment, or if you have any sort of income-based discount program with your local utilities, those will all continue. So nothing changes on that front. However, let's say you, leave appliances plugged in throughout the day. During the hours of 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., those are going to be peak hours during weekdays. Weekends, it's going to be back to normal. Holidays, back to normal. But weekday hours, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., are going to be peak hours. So using electricity during those times is going to be billed higher. Now, what this means is when you can try and, say, do laundry after 9 p.m. or do laundry on a weekend, then it, you know, business as usual, it continues. And we're always interested in hearing back of how this is affecting communities. We did initially some surveys and trying to get some feedback in 2017 as we prepared to roll this out. But California is an incredibly large state, and we want to continue hearing from as many voices as we possibly can. We really want to make sure that this doesn't inconvenience people. Primarily the reason that the state is transitioning to this is, well, there's a lot more people living in California now. So yeah, Energy Upgrade California is all about basically reaching out and teaching people how to save energy, getting them ready for this switchover to time of use. And the way we do this is we partner with small businesses, we partner with nonprofits, with community groups, things like CCB, and sponsor events like this. So if you're involved in a regional chapter, if you have a small business, any of this, and you'd like to get involved, find ways we can support you and help you get the message out as well, please come find me. I'm sure CCB has my contact info if you don't manage to find me here. But we're always looking to see how we can partner with the community and make this transition as simple as possible. If there's any questions, I can also.
Are there questions for Yesenia? Wait, yes. You need it. I heard Anita's voice first.
I think they have a mic over there.
Hold on. Give me a second.
I heard several behind in the back of the room before I heard you, Kristen. But we only have a couple minutes for questions, ladies and gentlemen.
Just from the standpoint, it's Rick Plath. From
Hang on. I heard Anita first. Where is Anita? Okay, I heard her first. Get the mic to her.
Hi. My question is real quick. I get a lot of calls or people coming to the door for solar. Now, I'm not interested in having solar energy in my house. Is that a factor to all this?
It's not. The reason some regions of the state have transitioned first to time of use is because they're very reliant on solar. But this is just going to affect regional energy providers regardless of whether they get it through, conventional electricity means, compressed natural gas, all of that. So time of use is going to be just statewide blanket.
Who else seeks the floor? I heard Christy say her name, and since she said her name, I'm going to let her have the floor. Make it fast, Christy. Christy?
Christy, where are you?
All right. So mine is the same kind of question as Anita. We're constantly being asked about solar. How much is your electric bill? And solar. And companies and that say that they are representing California energy programs, and how do we know the fakes from the real?
We can't do it.
So I would always advise you to consult with your existing energy provider. They have regional installers that say that they'll be able to tell you. So there's a program that works statewide called Grid Alternatives. They install solar for free in low-income communities and in rural communities. They are on the websites of these energy providers, or if you just call up your representative, they'll be able to tell you who's legitimate. But if someone's just knocking on your door, I wouldn't advise just taking their word for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know there are five people standing. This was Energy Upgrade California's official time as one of our sponsors. I promise you that over this next year, we will find ways to get information to you. We will have an article in the Blind Californian. We will have, I'm now understanding we need to arrange forums where your questions can get answered. But CCB will be looking into this matter, and we will make sure that Energy Upgrade California gets the information to you that you need so that you won't be unawares, taken advantage of, and spend your money when you don't need to on timed energy release systems. So I'm sorry, but we are going to have to move on at this time. I do want to thank Energy Upgrade California for sponsoring the fellowship walk. Also, they're going to low energy electricity users, the dog quiet room, the relief area, and the guide dog user handler's luncheon. So, thank you to Upgrade California Energy. Lots of people are going to want to talk to you, so we will get your. Okay, we're going to put something out in the connection so that you find out how to talk to Yessi and get in touch with her. So I promise we're going to pursue this issue over the remainder of this year. Okay? Is that good? Okay. In fact, as he just reminded me, the editor of the connection is sitting next to me. But I'm going to ask him to put on one of his other many, many hats. And this time it's going to be as chair of our bylaws committee. But I want you to give me a few seconds to get our table rearranged up here so our committee is up here. Jeff, if you would come down and sit to my left. Could you come down?
Jeff, do you need a fire guide?
Come on down. The water's fine. Woo! Gives wake-up call a whole new meaning. We need the rest of the bylaws committee up here. David, Steve, David, Frank. Anybody else?
Or do you want to share with Judy?
What? I can share with Judy, probably.
Are you sure?
We should share. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the time has come, and we are going to devote as much time as we can this afternoon. We are hoping to get to our vote today. This will be a roll call vote, meaning all board members will vote publicly, and then we will do a ballot among the chapters and the secret ballot, of course, of all the members in the room. But before we get there, we got to actually read the bylaws and discuss them. Now, here's how it's going to work. Jeff is here to my left. Jeff is going to read the bylaws article by article. Now, after we've read an article, there will be an opportunity to discuss it for up to 20 minutes, sort of the general rule we've been following for discussion, since God was a child. So we will go, for and against. Now, once we've heard a number, once we've used our 20 minutes, we'll see what the sense of the room is, but we'll do our very best to get through this discussion. Jeff, are there any other rules I was supposed to remember? I will be the chair I will preside. Gabe will speak for the committee. Jeff will do the reading. Gabe will speak for the committee, or he may ask one of his other committee members to respond to your questions and issues, because we want to make sure you understand everything there's, and that there aren't miscommunications, misunderstandings, misrepresentations, and so forth. Everybody clear on what's going to happen? Yes, yes, what's the question of clarification? No, we will vote at the end on the entire bylaws. Okay. Are you ready, Jeff?
I'm ready. Whoops.
Do you have a mic?
I do, but it's not. We have a microphone. It seems like it's not working, yes.
I would say. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Okay, so if there's no objection, I'm going to make one exception to the article by article, and that is at the very beginning. The preamble, the name, and the purposes I propose to read together.
Yes.
As one item. Okay, preamble. We, the members of the California Council of the Blind, having established in 1934, the CCB is an organization dedicated to the full equality and opportunity in society for Californians who are blind and low vision, and now seeking through revision of our governing document to renew our organization and our commitments in response to the demands of today's changing world, do hereby establish these bylaws to reflect continuity with the values and principles that have historically defined our organization through policies and resolutions. reiterate our commitment to a self-governing organization in which people who are blind and low vision are the supreme authority, maintaining control over our own decisions and lives. Develop mechanisms for acquiring the necessary management, fundraising, legal, financial, and technological expertise to assure the viability and success of the organization and to maximize its ability to meet the challenges of the future. And devise administrative and accountability structures to ensure that the authority delegated to officers and staff is utilized in ways that maximize its effectiveness and that preserve membership authority and control. Okay, Article 1. The name of this organization shall be the California Council of the Blind. All references to CCB or to the Council contained herein or contained in other documents filed or prepared by this organization shall be understood as references to the California Council of the Blind. Section 1.1. All references in these bylaws to people who are blind shall be understood to include people who are visually impaired. Article 2, purposes. The purposes of the CCB remain those embodied in its history and include to expand the economic opportunities, stimulate the remunerative employment, and promote the general welfare of people who are blind in California, and to cooperate with the American Council of the Blind in promoting the welfare everywhere of people who are blind.
That's where
I will stop.
Okay. Do we have a timekeeper?
I can do that.
Who's that? David.
David.
You are going to keep time. We will have, I'm going to ask if there's anybody questions on these, but whenever we do start our discussion, we will start the 20-minute clock. Each person will have no more than 2 minutes to speak. Okay, are there anybody seeking the floor on this, what Jeff has read so far? And stand up if you have a question. Is there anyone standing?
Rosemary Chase. Thank you. Rosemary Chase, Contra Costa County chapter. I would like to see the word education interjected between equality and opportunity in the preamble. So I would like you to be saying equality, education, opportunity.
Where?
My thinking, it's in the preamble, Jeff, and
it reflects the fact that we cannot have employable equality unless we have education and unless we continue.
Okay. What is the insertion? What is your recommendation?
That we.
Do you want to put in the word education? Would that
before correct? The word equality?
Between equality, then education.
Okay.
Then opportunity.
Is you'd consider that a friendly amendment? Okay, that's done, Rosemary.
Thank you.
I'm assuming
it's that, there.
Okay. Okay, we're
hello,
ready.
Hello,
okay, go ahead.
Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker. For the, I think it's 1.1, having to do with the definition, and it says visually impaired, could that be changed to low vision and blind?
Article 1.1.
Yes.
Section 1.1 of Article 1.
So it's really the word visually impaired, could that be changed to low vision?
Yes.
Low vision and blind, and so low vision and blind.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to remove the words visually impaired and insert the words low vision and blind, correct?
Okay.
All right.
People, let's try to keep this. We have so much to get through. Try to.
Okay. This is Ed Crespin. I'd like to add to that, instead of low vision, I think we should put legally blind, and visually impaired, because then we're identifying, according to the Social Security Act, the different categories of loss of vision. And we use it in the scholarship committee. We also use it in the Department of Voc Rehab.
So, Gabe, are you accepting this?
Gabe.
I need to. And what is it? You would insert what? Legally blind, Ed? Is that what you're?
Yeah, legally blind, visual impaired, legally blind, blind. But you could also put low vision.
But hang on, Ed. We have also got to get low vision in there. Right. So where does that fit?
What?
It's taking the place of visually impaired.
Ed wanted to. Okay, let me see if I understand you, Ed, and then Gabe can rule. You wanted to, number one, put visually impaired back, and number two, add legally blind. Is that correct?
Well, you could put legally blind, low vision, blind.
Okay, so you don't want to add low vision impaired back, but you do want legally blind to be inserted before low vision.
Correct.
Or actually, probably be better to be after low vision.
Yeah, just as long as it's in there.
Sure, sure.
Legally
okay.
Blind.
Ed, this is Gabe. Would you be just, I don't know if it really matters, and this is just me not understanding, but what if we said legally blind or low vision or low, does the order, I guess my question
it doesn't
is,
matter
does
the order
matter? You just want those three terms.
Right, it doesn't matter the order.
Yeah, we can do it.
Okay.
Yes, I'll take that as a friendly amendment.
Madam President, I have the mic.
Go ahead, Ken.
This is Gene Lozano.
Go ahead, Gene.
Just to be consistent throughout the document, if and when there's a reference to visually impaired, please change it to low vision so that we address it all at one time right now.
We will obviously make a global replacement. Okay.
Margie Donovan, I have the mic.
Go ahead, Margie.
I'm not sure how you guys are defining visually impaired, but I would like to ensure that we encompass people who have other vision problems. As an example, a lot of our vets that are coming back from war, they're not legally blind, but they have severe vision problems that stems from brain injuries.
Yeah. I think we just have to assume our terms cover that, Margie.
What is a term, I'm sorry, for visually impaired?
Low vision right now is what we're using.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
Can we move on?
Okay. We are ready for Article 3, Governance.
Could we have silence, please?
Operating under the laws of the United States and of the state of California, CCB is a nonprofit grassroots membership organization governed by its membership in accordance with these bylaws and operated by its members, officers, and staff in accordance with their respective roles as set forth below. Section 3.1. In the decisions it makes, the policies it adopts, and the activities it undertakes, the supreme authority of the CCB shall be in its members, acting through its board of directors and staff. Section 3.2. The organizational units of the organization, as described below, have designated responsibilities and authority to make decisions, to develop policies and procedures, to ensure compliance with these bylaws and with the requirements of law, and to conduct the requirements of, let me go back to the beginning of that sentence because it.
Yeah.
Okay, section 3.2. The organizational units of the organization, as described below, have designated responsibilities and authority to make decision, to develop policies and procedures, to ensure compliance with these bylaws and with the requirements of law, and to conduct the day-to-day work of a modern, not-for-profit organization. Sec 3.3. For the achievement of its purposes, the fulfillment of its responsibilities, and the conduct of its affairs, CCB consists of the following components, all described in greater detail in further articles of these bylaws. Section 3.3.1, its membership, deliberating and acting in annual convention. Sec 3.3.2, its president, carrying out the instructions of the membership, supervising the chief executive officer, leading the board, and representing the organization in a variety of relationships and community settings. Section 3.3.3, its chief executive officer, CEO, who is the only employee reporting directly to the board of directors, who is supervised by the president, and who is fully empowered to maintain all operational needs of the CCB as set forth in the approved annual budget, and the CEO position approved annual budget and the CEO position description, which is reinforced through the board staff communication policy. Section 3.3.4, its officers and directors carrying out the duties assigned to them, making and implementing policy decisions delegated to them or needing to be made between annual conventions, approving budgets and expenditures and other measures, working with such experts as may be recruited from time to time to address matters beyond the expertise of the board, and serving on such committees as may be created for various organizational purposes. Section 3.3.5, its chapters and at-large members, representing the organization in their local communities and with their peer groups, cooperating in statewide organizational initiatives, contributing to their local communities through technical assistance, advocacies, scholarship programs, and senior citizen outreach, and developing creative strategies to meet the identified and emerging needs and concerns of their members. Section 3.4, in any instances of disagreement over the rules governing this organization, these bylaws shall be the controlling authority. Any situation not covered by these bylaws shall be governed by the latest edition of Robert's Rules of Order. Section 3.5, the president and board of directors shall develop policy and administrative guidance when required, dealing with matters of administration, internal operations, timeframes for activities, allocation of responsibilities, chapter relationships, and such other matters as may be necessary to facilitate the efficiency, legal compliance, and overall well-being of the CCB. Section 3.5.1. These policy statements will be widely announced and will be made available in accessible formats. Section 3.5.2. Such policies shall be in effect unless overridden by the membership in the manner described in section 5.5.3 of these bylaws. And that is the end of the article.
Okay, David, the clock starts now. Comments on Article 3, and say your name so we know what order to take speakers in. Diane Deutsch, sixth floor, could you get her mic?
In section, it's either 3.1 or 3.2, is decision singular or plural?
What is it?
The board can make decision. Is it decision or decisions?
Decisions, plural.
It is plural. Okay, thank you.
Someone else?
Mr. Chair, it's Margie again.
You didn't call for the floor, Margie?
I did too.
I was handed the mic. Okay. Please don't hand somebody the mic until they have asked for the floor. Okay.
So you want to say verbally asked?
And been recognized by me. So go ahead, Margie.
Thank you, Judy. I'd like you guys to please hear me before you jump on me. And I got to go back to the previous section. There's a reason why.
I'm sorry, Margie. What section?
Regarding visually impaired, all of that.
We're done with that, Margie. I rule you out of order.
Okay.
So, any other comments on Article 3? Christy. Get Christy a mic.
Here, Christy. I have a mic for you. I'm not sure if I went to sleep or what happened or if I really remember this. Where does it say that we're the grassroots organization? Is it in this section?
It's in the preamble.
All right.
It's in lots of places in the bylaws, Christy.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, you know, I've always described our organization as a social action organization. And that's the way it was described to me by many people. So I just don't know if that can get in there, but I think it really says who we are.
Well, if
Isn't
you'll...
Isn't it in Article 3 as well, Gabe?
We use grassroots several places.
But I'm
We don't use the term, I think,
social action
in these bylaws. We have a lot of other... Yes, here's Gabe.
Christy, I agree with you that I've always heard of CCB as a grassroots organization. I don't know about social action. I've never seen social action appear in our current constitution or any other documents. So that was why we went with the term grassroots, was because that's what we've always heard, and that was the term that was requested of us to make sure that was specified in here throughout the process that we've been going through for the last many months.
Any further discussion of Article 3? Looks like we can move on, Jeff.
Okay. All right. We will now go on to Article 4, Affiliation. Section 4.1. The California Council of the Blind shall be an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind, ACB, a national membership organization. Section 4.2. The nature of this affiliation is one of reciprocity, excuse me, and mutual respect, rooted in history and shared values, and perpetuated in mutual efforts. And that is the end of that article.
Any discussion of Article 4?
Okay. Article 5, Convention, Section 5.1. There shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually, known as the Conference and Convention. The time and place to be fixed in advance. The annual conference and convention will demonstrate adherence to an elastic clause, meaning that it will adjust to the world's ever-changing climate and digital environment to maintain its effectiveness and credibility. Section 5.2. The members of the California Council of the Blind assembled at CCB's annual convention shall be the supreme authority of the organization. Section 5.2.1. At the beginning of each convention, the membership assembled shall adopt convention rules, Section 5.3. The convention will perform the duties and carry out its responsibilities as follows. Section 5.3.1, elect officers and board members. Section 5.3.2, receive and discuss reports from the CEO, the president, the treasurer, and other pertinent sources. Section 5.3.3, decide on all matters duly brought before the convention for input or vote. I almost said the word dull brought. That would have helped a little bit. Section 5.3.4, resolve any questions as to its own procedures or voting, including delegates, credentials, or discipline. Section 5.3.5, adopt resolutions embodying organizational policies, strategies, and goals. Section 5.3.6, provide a mutually respectful forum for the full and free expression and exchange of thoughts and concerns among the members. Section 5.4, in performing its responsibilities as set forth above, the convention's voting shall be subject to the following requirements. Section 5.4.1, for votes to be binding, a quorum must exist, defined as at least one-third of the chapter delegates or their alternates, and at least 50 individual voting members being present and voting. 5.4.2, Section 5.4.2. For analysis of all voting issues to be fair and thorough, measures shall be adopted to ensure that the substance of any issue, together with relevant background documents or statements, are made fully available to the membership in a reasonable time in advance of the proposed vote and with time allotted for discussion and debate. Section 5.5. In the fulfillment of its responsibilities, the convention shall observe the following margins for its decisions. Section 5.5.1. For amendment of these bylaws, a two-thirds majority shall be required. Section 5.5.2. For election of officers and board members, a majority shall be required. In the event no majority is achieved, a second round of voting, including the top two vote recipients, shall be immediately conducted. Section 5.5.3. For rejection of a policy adopted by the board since the last convention, a two-thirds majority shall be required. Section 5.5.4. For adoption of a resolution, a majority shall be required. Section 5.5.5. For expulsion of an individual member or chapter, a three-fourths majority shall be required, except that no vote on expulsion shall take place without the member or chapter being given the opportunity to offer a defense. Specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document. Section 5.5.6. For removal of an officer or board member, a majority of three quarters shall be required. Section 5.5.7. For suspension of a member or a chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document. Section 5.5.8. In elections, individual votes will be cast by secret ballot. And that is the end of the article.
Any discussion of this article? Jean Lozano seeks the floor. David, the clock starts now. Are you there? Are you? Got it. Okay. Go, Jean.
I just got the mic. Thank you. I have issues with, I believe it's Section 5.1, where regarding the convention being that there's no cap as to how long a convention could be postponed. I understand there's natural disasters. There may be issues in getting a convention site. However, with open-ended like that, it can be left for more than a year. And the membership are the ultimate supreme decision makers, voting on policy things there, where potentially this could be postponed maybe 2 years and the membership not having an opportunity to have, take action. The other item, and I don't know the, I can't recall the sections, but what we just passed, I believe, was last year, and that was the criteria for what would make a person become suspended or as a board member or from as a membership or being removed as a member of the organization or a board. Now that, it refers to the policy guidelines. We have them, and it's too important to have them put into a policy that can be easily changed from convention to convention. We need it to be in the Constitution, something that is constant and is unchanging and is predictable.
Gene, just 1 second. We're looking up something here.
No, he can't.
His time isn't up. What is it?
It's an Article 6.
Okay. Gene, this point is dealt with. We'll come back to it when we get to Article 6.
It says, though, it's referring it to a policy. The criteria will be established. And that means it's not going to be in the bylaws. And that is too important not to be in the bylaws. Thank you.
This is Gabe with just a clarification. Gene, the point that you were speaking to, the policy document we refer to here is simply going to discuss or outline how that hearing, defense, and vote would be done at the convention. The criteria that you are referring to, that discussion is more relevant for Article 6.
I don't know. Gabe, I do not interpret it that way. We have a disagreement. It sounds very clear to me that the criteria for the removal or suspension is going to be found in the policy guidelines to be established. Now, if that is not correct, then it needs to be clarified and corrected. Okay.
Gene, I'm not saying that your point is not valid. I'm just saying that your motion would be more relevant in Article 6, not here in Article 5.
Then have the language about referring to a policy removed.
All right, and let me...
I'll make that a motion. Okay. Remove, right. Refer to the policy.
Let me back up to real quick to your first point about the being worried about how long a convention can be.
Yes, that's the first concern.
Yeah, so let me take that in order. Our current constitution, this sentence was taken directly out of Article 5.1, or I think 5.1, of our current constitution that says there will be a conference and convention held annually. That is all the current constitution says.
Right.
So we are taking that exact same language from the current constitution, and our interpretation was that annually would mean that it has to be held during the year.
Then define it as annually then, because that's not what you have. You do not have a cap on it. It's going to be left wide open.
It says annually.
Gene, it does say annually.
Yeah, it does.
No, there is not a motion, yet. And there is not a second.
First, I move to remove the references to policy criteria, and that was seconded.
Do we have a second? So we're removing the reference to policies, except we should have some discussion to explain what the notion of policies throughout this entire document means.
Yes, I agree, and I think the two fundamentally is relying too heavily on policies, and rather what when many of these items need to be within the bylaws where they don't change.
Just one second. Okay, artists, go ahead.
No, we're still on. So could I read what I think might be his motion?
Yes.
So section, and there may be other places we'd have to clean up, assuming this even passes, but section 5.5.7 says, for suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set, and here's the rest of it, set forth in a policy document. And I'm assuming that Gene's motion would be to strike and set forth in a policy document.
That's my
location, yes. Okay, just to clarify.
You need to say why we have policy documents and have a strict time.
And then he seeks to have the other stuff added back.
No, it's not. You need to address why we have policies.
I guess this is Gabe speaking of why we had policies there, and it's not to try to make it so that there's a hidden way of doing anything or that it can be changed on anybody's whim. The policy document that we're referring to there of the guidelines is simply the guidelines that, like, say the rules of what Judy read out today of how the debate would be taking place. That is the policy guidelines that we are referring to here. We're not in that instance referring to the criteria under which an individual or a chapter member may or may not be removed. We're simply saying that if a motion comes up to remove that person or chapter, that these are guidelines of how that procedure would take place at the convention.
Kathy?
I would like to add clarification to what Jean was saying. So if we keep the word and policy guidelines that describe the procedures for the operation of the function or something like that may help clarify that the policy guidelines are only in regards to the procedural operation and the how-to piece of it, and to also at the beginning part of that set forth the criteria as referenced in the bylaws and the policy document guidelines that establish the procedures for operation. Does that make sense?
We have no clue what the amendment actually is.
Okay. Jeff, can you repeat what it says?
Yeah,
right now?
It sounded to me like, Kathy, you're not arguing the motion. You're arguing to do something different, and we need to talk to the motion. But I will read you the section, and I might be wrong. I'm
supporting the motion in terms of clarifying.
Okay, all right. But okay, here's the motion. For suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, strike, and specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document. So it would simply read, at this point, for suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required. That's all that section would read after the motion. After okay. This motion.
Okay. I would agree then with you that I am not supporting the motion that is currently on the floor. Yes. However, I would
That we have to speak to the motion that's on the floor, Kathy.
Okay. Then after that, I'll.
Okay. Jean withdraws the motion. And the second?
I will withdraw my motion.
Okay.
And Kathy seeks the floor again.
All right, Kathy.
Okay. I would like to make a motion regarding this to... So the current phrasing... Can you repeat that once again, Jeff?
Okay. For suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document.
Okay. Where it says specific, I'd like to make a motion that where it says specific rules and guidelines, so I'd like to say specific criteria as referenced in these bylaws. Okay, and
so, okay, wait a minute. So after you're inserting something after guidelines?
Before guidelines.
Before guidelines. Or before rules. Okay. Because I'm not quite sure what you're doing, Kathy.
So
specific rules and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document. That's the portion that we're debating at the moment. Really.
Okay. So specific rules and criteria as referenced in these bylaws. You got that addition?
Yeah, hang on. I'll put in specific rules and... Okay, yeah. Whoops, hang on, I messed it up. Hit the wrong keys, sorry. Okay, I got it.
Now it says, and guidelines of policies in this document that are related to the procedural operation.
Wait a minute. So, okay, hold on. Okay, so first you have rules and, yes. Okay, and specific rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws, and then and guidelines. And what's after guidelines? See, this...
Guidelines, you currently have about the developed through policies, which can stay, and I'm adding at the end of policies to describe the policies I want to...
shall be set forth in a policy document, and then that, you would add...
That describes the procedures for the operational... task. I'm
for the operation of this section. Let's
yes.
Just.
So the idea is that when you have the criteria of what will occur in the bylaws, and you have the policies that are speaking specifically to the procedural operations.
All right. So the motion is, this is the way the sentence would read, for suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document that describe the procedures for the operation of this section.
What? Gabe, are you going
to... No, I...
Wait a minute. We haven't needed... We're getting a ruling over here from Gabe on his...
So I think there needs to be a semicolon after the criteria. So they're two separate actions. The criteria is referenced in the bylaws.
A specific rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws, and then a comma? You mean? So it's a separate type of thing?
Yes. A comma would be fine then.
Okay. So how? What are those rules about then?
Oh, they have to do with the expulsion of the individual or the group.
Okay. And then, and guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document that describe the procedures for the operation of this section.
Yes.
Christy, there are lots of people ahead of you.
Or several.
I don't quite.
I thought for a minute it looked good, but now I'm a little more confused.
Okay, I guess I'm still a little confused. The committee's purpose in even referring to policy documents throughout here was that having strict things set forth in the bylaws limits us to having to have a constitutional amendment or an amendment, have that go into effect several months later, and not affect anything until probably the following year. And so our purpose in this is not to, not to try and hide anything, but to give us as an organization more flexibility to change to adapting situations. And I guess I just don't know what else to say about why why we've referred to policy documents here. And at this point, if anybody else on the committee feels like they can give a clear statement.
It's his call.
Okay, we don't regard this. This is a friendly amendment. This is not a friendly amendment. So that's the ruling of the committee, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And again, the reason we have bylaws is to streamline everything. If we lay out everything in the bylaws that was in the old Constitution and everywhere else, it becomes a cumbersome document. And the whole point is to modernize and to try to keep the bylaws so that the policy documents do the heavy lifting and the bylaws are the framework. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, where are we? We've got a John Glass.
Whether she makes a motion or not.
Okay.
Yes.
So she has made the motion.
Yeah.
And we've got a second.
Okay. All right. So
all right. John Glass. Okay. So I'm going to just allow a few more minutes for discussion of this motion. Who is that? John Glass. Who's the lady back there? Say your name. Say your name.
On the motion. Just make sure.
Okay. So I heard John Glass several times. It is John.
Okay. Okay. I have a microphone here. Thank you very much. I would like to just strongly suggest to people that they vote against this motion. You know, folks, we're a professional organization and we've got to start acting like it. And what we all need to realize is that the bylaws committee has worked for the last several months on these documents. Every professional organization I've ever been involved with has policies and procedures that are not listed in their constitution and or bylaws. And I think we need to give people some leeway here to run the organization. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Artists, I know you saw the flower hours ago. Is it on a different matter? All right, I'll get back to you then, artists. I just haven't forgotten you. Christy, are you speaking directly for or against this motion?
Lisa.
What about Lisa?
Wait a minute. Who had a question? Lisa. Wait a minute, Christy. If there's a, is there a question? Is it a question or a clarification?
No, I had a question for the person making the motion, Kathy, who made the motion, to figure out the intent of the motion. My question was, is the content of the motion and the point of the motion so that the procedures for expelling or suspending someone so that they're laid out in the bylaws and in this policy document in advance? Is that the intent of the motion?
Not until she answers the question.
This is Kathy. No, the policy document would include the procedures for how to do it, and I would agree with Gabe in that respect. The intent of the motion was to distinguish between the procedural piece of it and the criteria piece, which I understand is already in other parts of the bylaws.
So again, people will have to vote depending on what their answer is. Christy had the floor, and then I'm going to recognize Steve as a member of the committee first, and then I'll come to you, Christy. Steve, you need a mic?
I have one.
Okay. You need to speak into it.
Oh, I had lunch already, but never mind. There does appear to be some confusion here. Now, as we understood it, the purpose of this reference in Article 5.5.7 did relate to the operational procedures that would be used. Obviously, these operational procedures are necessarily articulated to a degree that we want to make sure that due process is provided, and that requires more detail than can be included in the specific constitutional provision. This has nothing to do with the criteria for discipline. Those are dealt with in Article 6. We'll get to them in a moment. And it's important not to confuse those. If we were to try to specify in the Constitution all the procedures that would be required, the moment a procedural issue arose that was not anticipated in the Constitution, we'd be faced with the need for a constitutional amendment or the risk of chaos. Nobody wants that. I think that the understanding of the distinction between procedure, which has to be dealt with on a somewhat more ad hoc basis, but obviously always subject to the approval of the convention, because all board policies will be subject to the approval of the convention. So that combination of that plus the separation out into Article 6 of the criteria really should satisfy all the concerns, and they're, of course, valid concerns, but should satisfy them fully.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Christy, and then we're going to vote.
I just have a problem with, I understand why Jean and Kathy are saying we need to do something with this thing, because the way it's written, it's basically saying are to be developed, and so forever in perpetuity they will are to be developed. It's not clear.
Okay, I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor of this motion, do we need to clarify what the motion is? All right. Read both what? All right.
Okay.
Jeff, you have it as is in the brain.
What?
You have it as is in your brain.
I know, but finding that would be rather hard. Yeah. For suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and guidelines shall be developed in a policy document. Correct, Gabe?
That's the original.
Okay, but I messed up the original with this motion. So now, with the motion, for removal of an officer or board member, a majority of three-quarters, wait a minute, that was the wrong one. Sorry, right one. 5.5.7, for suspension of a member or chapter, a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws.
Steve,
wait a minute, I left a word. Left out a word, didn't I? A two-thirds majority shall be required and specific...
rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws. Should be probably under specific. Under
just
specific
read it as
rules.
She said it. Read it as she. You
okay.
Just read it. Keep reading.
The reason, the way I have it, is a two-thirds majority shall be required, and specific specific rules and criteria as referenced in the bylaws.
Okay.
And guidelines shall be developed and set forth in a policy document that describe the procedures for the operation of this section. That's the way I have it.
All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No. No.
The motion is defeated. Article 6. Oh, I'm sorry. Artis had a question about another area of this article.
There was a phrase in there about a policy decision made by the board could only be changed by a two-thirds majority of the membership. I'm a little concerned about that. Are the policy decisions made by the board, is that by a majority vote or by a two-thirds vote? I mean, if there's a policy made by the board by a just majority vote, why should the convention membership have to have a two-thirds vote? I'm a little concerned about that.
Gabe? So, Artis, you're questioning why one place to...
Why does it take two-thirds of the membership to
overturn
change a policy that the board has made?
Yes,
So, you want me to read the section just so we're clear on what she's talking about?
Yeah.
5.5.3. For rejection of a policy adopted by the board since the last convention, a two-thirds majority shall be required. Correct, Artis? That's the one you're... Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Artis, we will take that as a friendly amendment to change the section that says that to overturn a policy that it requires, we'll just say a majority vote.
Okay. All right. Are we ready to move on to Article 6?
So is that
a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So we will strike a majority. We're striking out two-thirds.
And saying majority.
Right.
All right. Articles, and tell me when you're ready to read Article 6, Jeff.
Okay. I just
and you know
struck
what?
Out
we,
a word.
We, Resolutions Committee may be starting meeting at 10, but in order to finish the convention business, we may be starting to meet at 10 o'clock tonight.
Oh, I'm almost there. Okay.
Article 6.
Officers and Directors. Section 6.1. Between conventions and throughout the year in the performance of its duties, CCB shall be governed... drink of water. Yeah. Yeah, that's one way to do it. That's the way I always did it when I was president. Shall be governed by its officers and directors. Section 6.2. The officers of this organization shall be the president, the first and the second vice presidents, the secretary, the treasurer, and the immediate past president. Section 6.2.1. The president and the two vice presidents shall be legally blind. Section 6.3. All members in good standing shall be eligible to run for election to the board of directors. Section 6.3.1. The board shall consist of 15 persons, the six officers and the nine directors. Section 6.3.2. All candidates running for office are strongly encouraged but not required to submit a candidate statement no less than 30 days prior to the beginning of the convention. All candidates we'll have up to 5 minutes at the elections to have up to two people speak on their behalf. Section 6.4. All terms of office shall be for at least 2 years, commencing on July 1st of the year in which the election was held, and ending on June 30th. Section 6.4.1. In the event that the annual convention in any year does not occur before July 1, terms of office of current members shall continue until the date of such convention. New terms shall begin immediately following the election and will end on the date they otherwise would have. Section 6.4.2, election shall be staggered with the president, the second vice president, and the treasurer being elected in even-numbered years, the first vice president and the secretary being elected in odd-numbered years. The board election shall likewise be staggered so that four directors are elected in even-numbered years and five directors are elected in odd-numbered years. Section 6.5, officers and directors shall not serve for more than three consecutive terms in any given office. Section 6.5.1, an individual who completes an unexpired term shall not be charged with a term for purposes of term limits. Section 6.6, in the event that an officer director vacates their position prior to the scheduled end of their term, the president, with the concurrence of a majority of the board, shall appoint a replacement who shall serve for the remainder of the term. Sections, 6.6.1. Subject to section 6.2.1, in case of a vacancy in the office of the president, a special election will be held by the executive committee made up by the remaining officers to determine who will serve as the new president of the remainder of the term. And I would just add, since it's hard for folks to follow, section 6.2.1 refers back to the provision that says the president and two first vice president and the two vice presidents will be legally blind. Okay, section 6.6.2. In the event of a vacancy in the CEO position, the president shall assume the duties of the position until a successor can be hired. Section 6.7. Officers or directors may be censured, suspended, or removed from the board only under certain circumstances and only after a hearing before the board or membership. Detailed reasons and procedures will be provided in a policy document. The board may censure or suspend a board member for cause, but may only remove an officer or a director if that person does something illegal or detrimental to the interests of the council. If a board member is removed at the convention, then a special election will immediately follow to elect a replacement. Anyone elected under such circumstances will serve for the remainder of the existing term, and this term will not count as a term for purposes of term limits. If the director is removed between conventions, then the position will remain vacant until the next convention, when it will be filled by a regular or special election. Section 6.7.1. When a board member is censured, they will receive written notice of disapproval and warning that if the offending behavior continues, suspension and or removal could result. Section 6.7.2. Upon imposition of a suspension, the suspended officer or director forfeits the right to vote as a member of the board, participate in board deliberations, or in any way to be a part of the board of board communications. Section 6.8. The roles of the board officers shall be consistent with roles practiced across the nonprofit sector and documented in individual position descriptions. Position descriptions will remain elastic and consistent with a changing world. These duties will be detailed in a board policy document. Section 6.9. In general, as the leadership body of the organization and to satisfy its fiduciary responsibilities, the board of directors is responsible for Section 6.9.1, promoting membership development by supporting the work and development of chapters, expanding community partnerships and program expansion, ensuring scrupulous compliance with all government and regulatory requirements, conducting annual board performance reviews, maintaining a relevant conflict of interest and confidentiality policy signed on an annual basis by all board members, and adhering to data security practices as set forth in the applicable board policy document. Section 6.9.2, all people elected or appointed as officers and board members shall commit to serious and sustained engagement in the work of the organization, reflecting commitment of time, talent, or treasure. Section 6.10, The board shall establish such standing or special committees as it deems necessary. Standing committees shall exist until and unless terminated by the board, and special committees shall exist for designated periods or pending the completion of the tasks for which they were created. Section 6.10.11. Standing committees shall initially include awards, budget and finance, bylaws, government affairs, membership, publications, resolutions, and scholarship. Section 6.10.2. Committee appointments shall be made by the president. Any board member or any member of the organization in good standing shall be eligible for appointment to a committee. Section 6.10.3. Non-members of the organization may be appointed by special committees under circumstances where their knowledge or expertise are not otherwise readily available within the organization are needed, or where in-depth experience not readily available from within the within organizational ranks is required. And that's the end of the article.
Artis, I heard Artis first, then Ed. Go ahead, Artis, and our time starts now. David? Yeah, I mean, it'll start when you talk. Start talking, Artis.
Okay, I have two amendments I'd like to see. One is that where it says the president and two vice presidents should be legally blind, I think we ought to add, and the majority of the board is legally blind. And the other reference I'd like to see is that there be no more than, that there can only be one member of the board from one family.
So you got to do one at a time. You
can't. One at a time. The first one, would you consider that? Okay,
Gabe. So the first one I would take as a friendly amendment. The second one, I don't think the committee can take that as a friendly amendment.
But explain. Okay.
So the first amendment again?
The first amendment was adding where it says that the president and both vice presidents must be legally blind. She wanted to say, and a majority of the board must be legally blind. So that the committee will take as a friendly amendment.
And Gabe, what section would that be put in?
What was it?
If you have
6.2.1, I think is where it is.
Well, I'll put that down for now. It's fine. I just wanted to have an idea. Thank you.
Yeah. And the reason the committee is not willing to take the second amendment as friendly, suggestion as a friendly amendment is that we feel that, yes, we are a fairly large organization, but we have few enough people that are willing to run for the board that we do not feel like we would want to see us, in essence, artificially limiting that pool of people, of candidates. And we feel that at the end of the day, our members are going to know who is related to whom, and
that happens first.
We'll take that into consideration when they vote.
So, Artis, are you making that an official amendment? Official motion?
Yes. Second.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second, and the motion is that basically no relatives can serve on the board. No immediate families can serve on the board. Margie was first, then I heard Christy.
So give me your language again, Margie, Artis. Artis, so I can take it down.
Tell me when I can speak, please.
Just one second, Margie. Jeff is getting the motion down.
Okay.
Go ahead, Margie.
Thank you, Judy. I stand in support of this motion. Gabe, I heard what you said. I saw the number of people running last night. And if we think that we're too small, that we have to have too many people, or more than one person per family on the board, why do we exist? We had runoff after runoff last night. My observation is we have plenty of members willing to run for the board. So I encourage a yes vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Does she?
Okay. Christy asked for the, and then Steve. I'm actually always going to. I'm going to recognize as the members of the constant because the bylaws committee because they've been working hard on this and he may have an explanation to help. So Steve, you have the floor, and then Christy.
Okay.
You need to have your mic, Steve.
Of course, it goes without saying that there are people who want to run for the board and very good people. But here's what we thought. Number one, we trust our members to choose the right people, to choose the best people from their standpoint. Second of all, our members know very well who's related to who, and to the extent that they think it's an issue, either in general or in a particular case, they can vote accordingly. But if you're going to make a restriction regarding family members, then you also have to make a restriction regarding close friends. Because in the end, what really is the difference? If what you're afraid of, if what you're afraid of is people subordinating the interests of the organization to their personal loyalties, then that risk does not end at the family line. That risk is much greater. So you have to then begin to conduct an inquisition into who's friends with who, who's alive.
Okay,
who
Steve. Thank
impossible.
You.
This is Christy.
Go ahead, Christy.
So I'm speaking in opposition to this motion, except that I might say I understand one of the problems, and that is I would say members of the executive board may not be related or something like that.
You mean the six officers, Christy?
Yes.
I see.
But not the whole board.
That's a separate issue, but I understand your point.
I was just
clarifying.
What I want to say is this. So what's to stop? What's to stop one member of the board from divorcing or getting married or, okay, you married this person, so you're off the board? Come on, guys.
All right, we've heard two against, and I've heard one for. Is there another person speaking for the amendment? All right, I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. No. The motion is opposed. Jean seeks the floor. Is this for a discussion of a separate issue, Jean?
Yeah.
Jean, just a second.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Go ahead.
I would like a clarification on the friendly amendment that was earlier that artists proposed majority. And in our current bylaws, and I'm open to being corrected, that two-thirds, it's currently in our bylaws, two-thirds of the board are to be, quote, blind. And I was wondering why we don't stay consistent with what we currently have right now. That's one thing.
Let's deal with them one at a time, Gene.
No, I'm not going any further. I'm waiting for this.
Okay.
Is there a preference for a reason, one over another one? Two-thirds or change to majority, which...
Hang on just a minute.
The voters will decide. I believe ACB is a majority where, if I'm not mistaken, CCB has been two-thirds.
Okay, it is consistent with ACB.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the reason of majority the artists suggested and why we took that as a simple or as a friendly amendment was to stay consistent or to be consistent with ACB. I guess I don't have a problem with staying consistent with our current constitution, but but
I personally, as a member, would like to have kept the two-thirds of the board. But I was asking for clarification on that.
Yeah, and I guess the other reason I would say is that our member, I trust our membership. Our members are going to know who's on the board, and I would trust our membership to make that decision. But
I'm not trying to get into further debate. I was just asking for clarification on that.
You have another issue, Gene?
Yes. Okay. Within this article.
Go ahead.
And again, I don't want to make the mistake I did in Article 3, but would you please clarify, and it's been such a long time, in this section, the article that talked about a policy, which I thought I heard, which you were trying to correct me, and I made error, about criteria for what is the criteria for suspension or removal. No. We're talking about Article 6 right now, so please clarify to me what is covered in this policy that you're proposing to be written.
Basically, Gene, the policy isn't written, but what we would put in there is pretty much the content of what is in our current Article 10.11.
Is there a reason that why does it has to be a policy and not actually continue to be part of this new bylaws?
The reason that the committee chose to go that way is what I had said earlier of preferring to leave the bylaws a little bit streamlined and I'm not going to say allow for flexibility because this is something hopefully that wouldn't be changed, but I guess to leave the minutiae of trying to cover every situation out of the bylaws and let the bylaws be the framework. Okay. While I think it was Kathy earlier said that the bylaws are the framework, the policy documents do the heavy lifting. Or Judy. I'm sorry, it was Judy that said that.
Well, okay.
But that's exactly what we're trying to do here.
Okay. I am not going to attempt. I get the sense that there's little support on this, a concern, but I think this is a major mistake the organization's making, and I'm really troubled the direction we're taking if we're going to not put this into the bylaws.
Thank you. Make a motion.
Okay, Christy, you have a point on Article 6? Go ahead. Then Lisa. Oh, I'm sorry. Ed, you were second. I'm sorry.
Can I give it to him after I...
No, he gets to go first, Christy.
Oh.
Are we?
Sorry. This morning we were talking about our vision. We talked about having a person in the South and maybe holding an office. This is a friendly amendment that I'd like to see is have a first vice president North, second vice president South, something like that, or just a vice president North, vice president South. That would put our vision to have somebody in the South, in our area or the area of the South, to make sure that's going to be implemented.
That's divisive.
Yeah, but if he wants to make a motion,
That is, the committee views that as being too divisive or segregatory and would not accept that as a friendly amendment.
Why would it be? I don't understand. Because if we have somebody in the South as, let's say, an office in the South, why not have a representative of the board to be in the South? Then you elect somebody for the North and you elect somebody from the South. I don't understand.
So, Ed, like I said, we're not willing, because of putting the geographical restrictions on board positions, the committee is not accepting that as a friendly amendment. So I guess I would ask that if you do want that, you need to be made a motion and get a second, but that's the ruling of the chair.
Well, I'd like to, I'd like to make a motion that we have Vice President North, Vice President South.
A second.
There's a second. Motion and second on the floor. I'm going to limit discussion. Who'd like to discuss? Who? Wait a minute. I heard Rob, and I heard another woman over here on my right. Say your name. Who?
And I'm opposed.
Albert. Go. Okay, Robert first.
I'm going to speak in opposition. I think it's what I'd like to see happen is a little more faith that the membership would make the correct decision in these matters. And I suspect that given our history and the way we do things, I have a feeling that it's very possible that the membership may very well decide in an election to choose one vice president from the South and one from the North.
As we did last night.
I think that's very possible. My concern about some of these resolutions that we're hearing is that people are trying to codify too much. And I would like to ask a question. There was concern that a majority, that we worry about a majority or a two-thirds majority of people on the board being cited. I would like to ask, in our history, how many cited people have ever been on the board, percentage-wise? I think these are issues that are just manufactured. I don't think they're critical.
Thank you. Okay. Now, as I understand it, Albert is speaking for. Are you speaking for or against this, Albert?
I'm speaking against it.
We'll take a four. No, Albert. Okay. We'll take a four next, and then I'll recognize you against. Somebody for it? Chris, who's that? Christy's speaking for it.
One of the problems that we've been having in this organization is a big split between the North and the South. And although we do now have representation on the South, there was a point in time before Artis became secretary, I believe that everyone on the executive board was from the North.
Okay, Albert, you are speaking against?
The way I look at it, we have always been working as all throughout the state. It's the same thing with respect to the whole thing with geographic location. What does it matter? Again, I think we are able to sense where we are all from, and I think, as long as we see that the membership, because we're all from the same state and we should be all working toward the same goals. I think to say one from one area and one from another is just being more limiting, I think.
Yeah.
So I am against it.
Okay, I'll take one more four and then we're going to vote. There's no one for, we'll vote. All in favor? Wait a minute. Ed, you made the motion. You set up the motion. So I'd like to hear somebody else speak for it. We know you're for it. Who was that? All right, Vivian.
Okay, I see the advantage of that is we're creating balance for the board. And a lot of times, it's just a good idea to recognize that we are covering the entire state. And sometimes we frankly have problems covering the entire state. Yeah. So I'm just thinking more of a thinking mode.
Possibly,
here.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that about balance.
Okay, I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
No. No. Motion is defeated. Anything else under Article 6? We're actually out of time on Article 6. So I'd like to know how many more people have issues under Article 6. I heard Margie, I don't need you to speak for Frank. Uh, Wait a minute. How many? Frank has a point. Who else has a point on Article 6? Wait, I'm sorry. Hang on, people. I need the committee up here to... Wait a minute. Okay. I heard Frank. Who else?
Lisa.
Christy? No, Lisa?
You said Lisa a while ago.
Mike Keithley.
Okay. It's the sense of the floor. I mean, it seems to me that we need to continue discussion of Article 6. I'm willing to do that for another, 15 minutes. We've got to move on, people. So, Frank.
My question is quick. I believe it was Section 6.3 when it was listing which officers are elected in odd years and which are elected in even years. I might have misheard it, but I thought it sounded like the listing of officers was different than is currently. Jeff, can you clarify that?
Yeah, it's, Gabe will.
Go ahead, Gabe.
Yes, Frank, it is different, and the reason for that is that the committee wanted to split the years. Currently, the president and first vice president are elected in the same year, and the committee wanted to split and have the president and first vice president elected in opposite years.
Okay. Lisa.
Mike. Oh, okay. This was in 6.0. Sorry. Lower, okay.
Back off a little.
My voice lower.
No,
okay.
Back off the mic a little bit.
This was either 6.6 or 6.7 when they were talking about the suspension or removal. The criteria were illegal and detriment to
the council.
That second part seems like, I'm curious as to why you guys didn't use maybe the word unethical. Something that's, maybe a little more clear and concrete.
Actually, go ahead, Gabe.
Actually, Lisa, we talked about several wordings like that, and we felt like detrimental was actually clearer than unethical. We felt unethical was too vague, and my ethics might be different than your ethics, might be different from Steve's or somebody else's. Detrimental, we felt could be defined as something that would harm CCB. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Mike Keithley next.
There was reference to candidate statements. I think it was in the earlier part of Article 6. I don't think those are needed. I think the references to candidate statements should be removed.
Should be deleted?
Yes. Yes.
Mike, this issue actually came up on one of our several conference calls that we invited the membership to, and the feeling of the many, many members that were on that call was that they wanted the language of candidates being, I think it said urged but not required to submit statements. So that actually came directly from several members.
Did someone else have a point on Article 6?
I did, Christy.
I'm sorry, Christy. Go ahead.
So I was concerned about the same kind of thing that Jean's talking about, and that is that so much is covered by policy. First of all, where are the policies? Who's making the policies? When will these policies be made? And what happens when the policies are not put in place yet, but we have a situation?
Christy, that question is a relevant one only in the sense that every transition, every change of constitution, every change of governance and organization involves a couple of gray areas as to timing. Obviously, the policies are going to be developed by the board, and they're going to be disseminated and made known. And of course, as we learned before, they're going to be subject to review and approval or rejection by the membership. As to the timing, they're going to be rolled out pretty much in the order of their immediacy and their need. For example, there are some that are legally required. For example, our compliance with certain fiduciary responsibilities under the law. Those are going to come out first. The next ones that will come out will be the ones that are essential to the day-to-day administration, personnel policies, things of that nature. So they're going to be rolled out as quickly as we can and in an order which is dictated by the exigencies of our circumstances. Now, you ask what happens if something is not covered. Well, the same question could be asked about the bylaws as a whole. What happens, no matter how detailed you tried to be or we tried to be, if something was not covered? And I can guarantee you, however detailed you tried to be, there will be things that are not covered. At least this way, we have the flexibility and the opportunity to cover them without having to wait a year or potentially even a year and a half to deal with might but be a serious or even organizationally threatening situation.
Okay. I'm going to move on to Article 7.
Madam President.
All right, Jeff.
I am not going to bring this up today, but I do agree with Gene, and I am going to, because I think these bylaws need to be passed, but I am going to say that at next convention, I do intend to move to see that Article 10 point, whatever it is, be returned to the bylaws. But I think we need to pass these bylaws. I think we're going to be okay under this for a temporary period of time. So that's my position.
Okay, moving on to Article 7.
Okay, Article 7 is council membership. Section 7.1. All persons all persons duly recognized by their chapters as members in good standing shall automatically be members of the California Council of the Blind. Section 7.2. All persons choosing to join the CCB as members at large who pay their dues directly to CCB and are otherwise in good standing shall have the full rights of membership. Section 7.3, CCB shall have three membership types. Section 7.3.1, active members shall be anyone at least 16 years of age in good standing. Section 7.3.2, life members shall be persons who have received the status of life membership. Once a person's life membership is fully paid, that person shall not be required by CCB to pay additional dues to maintain their membership rights. Section 7.3.3. Apprentice members shall be individuals under the age of 16 who shall be entitled to all privileges of membership except voting or holding a position on the board of directors. That's the end of the article.
This is Christy again.
All right, Christy.
Okay, in 7.3.2, can we add the word state because they still have to pay chapter dues for the local chapters? So just a point of clarification.
I don't, do you understand what Christy's asking for?
Okay. So she wants to make it clear that the dues that they don't have to pay are only state dues as opposed to chapter
okay,
dues.
Okay, that's friendly, right?
Are you talking about members at large, Christy? You said 7.2?
No,
life members.
No. Life members.
Life members, okay. And you wanted to say what now?
She would like it to say, I will read the, in that section, once a person's life membership is fully paid, that person shall not be required by CCB to pay additional, and she wants to insert state before the word dues to maintain their membership rights.
Yeah. Okay, I'll take that.
Because they're already not required to pay any dues by this wording.
No.
Yeah, oh. They're already not required.
The wording says...
That's a perfectly legitimate...
Yeah, I'll take it as friendly, Christy.
Okay. Anything else on Article 7? Who's Art Ed? Thank God we don't have a ruling that says two family members can't talk on the...
We read it. Members at large. I'm a little concerned about that because members at large could be anybody in the state, anybody who wants to pay dues. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if we do a big, huge campaign and there's a member of a large who are not legally blind, could they vote?
Members at large have a vote at convention.
Okay, I'm concerned about that and I don't know how to address it.
Members at large are active members. And, you know, God forbid we should get some sighted members in this room. No, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. The chair should not. Is there a further, you're concerned, is there a further point?
Oh, it's on the same issue.
Okay.
I just want clarification. Are members at large the same as affiliate members?
No, the members at large are members at large. They just don't belong to a chapter or an affiliate.
Okay. But
yeah. Okay. Anything else on Article 7? Mike, I heard you. Mike Keithley.
I think this our section about apprentice membership is just an administration hassle, and it shouldn't be necessary.
He doesn't want apprentice dues because he thinks it's a hassle, but we want to encourage younger people.
Mike, the reason that we are including apprentice members is twofold here. One, we want to encourage future members of this organization. And two, that is actually in line with what ACB has in its Constitution.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would love to bring this to a vote today, and we will continue to 5 if necessary, but we would need to start voting at about 4:30. So I'm just letting you know. Otherwise, we'll be voting tomorrow on this. Anything else on Article 7? Okay, let's move on to Article 8, Jeff.
Okay, this is CCB chapters. Section 8.1. CCB affiliation consists of local or regional chapters and of statewide special interest affiliates, PRINs, hereinafter also known as chapters. Section 8.1.1. An individual may join more than one chapter, exercising full rights of membership and voting in each, and paying dues to each, except that, for purposes of voting at the annual CCB convention, an individual may cast only one vote on their own behalf. At-large members who join a chapter shall give up their at-large status. Section 8.2, any group of 10 or more individuals, a majority of whom are blind, as determined by self-declaration, may apply for affiliation as a chapter of the California Council of the Blind. Section 8.2.3, to be accepted for affiliation as a CCB chapter and to remain in good standing, the group shall, section 8.2.2.1, submit to the CCB office such information and documentation at such time and in such manner as the council may require. Section 8.2.2.2 provides such certifications and commitments as the council may deem necessary, including the timely provision of membership, activity, and financial information, and full cooperation in all matters bearing upon legal compliance. Section 8.3. Existing chapters, which have already incorporated themselves under the laws of the state of California and or which have obtained their own federal, state/state tax exemption certifications, certificates shall be permitted to maintain those statuses, except that if either status lapses, the affiliate may not renew it and will instead operate under CCB's corporate and tax-exempt umbrella. Section 8.3.1, new chapters seeking affiliation will operate under CCB's corporate tax-exempt certificate. Section 8.4, the privileges, including a chapter's right to vote at the annual convention and to participate in organizational funding and program initiatives, are summarized in these bylaws and will be set forth in full detail in board policies. Section 8.4.1, any chapter not retaining at least 10 members, parens, a majority of whom are blind, by self-declaration, parens, for two consecutive years shall be deemed inactive and may be subject to withdrawal of its charter upon vote of the CCB Board of Directors or by the membership at an annual convention. For purposes of determining chapter membership, the CCB president, who is an ex officio member of all chapters, shall not be counted except for any chapter where the president has paid dues for that chapter. Section 8.4.2. No funds in the possession or under the ownership or control of any chapter shall inure to the benefit of any individual, and in the event of the dissolution or inactivation of any chapter, including dissolution as a result of membership decline, its funds and other property shall revert, after payment of its debts and obligations, to the CCB. Each chapter shall include this non-inurement provision in its governing documents. Section 8.4.3. All chapters shall adopt and implement the Council's conflict of interest policy as set forth in the conflict of interest policy document adopted by the Council pursuant to the bylaws. Section 8.5. On all matters becoming for the annual convention of the CCB, each chapter shall have a minimum of 5 votes. Once the chapter has more than 25 members, its number of votes will be determined by dividing the total number of members by 5 and rounding to the nearest whole number. Section 8.5.1. If a delegate or alternate delegate is not present or otherwise available to cast the chapter's vote shall not be cast. However, each individual chapter member in attendance shall retain his or her right to vote as an individual. Section 8.6. Each chapter shall collect dues annually from its members in an amount to be determined by the chapter. Section 8.6.1. Each chapter shall annually pay such portion of member dues or such funds as may be required to the council office. Section 8.7. When a chapter violates these bylaws, the board of directors may, by majority vote, suspend the chapter for a period no longer than until the next regular council convention. The convention shall then vote on disciplining the chapter, with all options ranging from full reinstatement to expulsion open to it as it sees fit, subject to the limitations and percentage threshold requirements set forth in Article 5 on voting. That's the end of the article.
Is it? Go ahead, Artis.
There is nothing in there that says with the information that needs to be transmitted into the office, like the rosters, what needs to be sent in.
Yeah, it says all information, Artis.
I know, but that's a problem, because a few years ago we had major issues with chapters just submitting lists of members. We didn't know if they were legally blind or if they were sighted or whatever, and there were major issues, and that's why the Constitution was amended a couple years ago to reflect exactly what chapters and affiliates needed to send in to the office to comply.
Artis, this is Gabe. This is probably the primary place where I have always felt that one of these policy documents is going to be the biggest use. There have been times, that's where all of the different documents and information that goes on those documents would reside. It's also where the schedule of when that information needs to be submitted will reside. And the reason that we want those in a policy document adopted by the board rather than in the Constitution and bylaws is because exactly what you stated, there have been times where the information needs to be changed. There's times where the schedule of when that needs to be turned in needs to change. And if that information is in the bylaws, then it could be a year and a half before that's able to be implemented. So, well,
I guess I feel uncomfortable unless we pass policies at the same time as we pass the Constitution.
Well, like I said, that particular policy especially is going to probably be one of the first ones that is presented to the board.
Any other comments on Article 8? Larice, hey, you're missing your reception.
Hi. In 8.1, I didn't hear an exclusion of two votes for a person who belongs to two chapters. I heard that the person can vote as an individual, but I didn't hear that if the person can vote as an individual, what if the person is also a delegate?
Sure.
So then that would give them two votes.
Well, you don't get two votes now. You would get your individual vote, and you would cast your vote as a delegate for your chapter. And that would remain the same under these bylaws.
So that's not two votes?
No.
Madam President, isn't the only real difference that this is creating is that currently when you're in two or three affiliates, only one affiliate can count you for its delegate votes. Now, if you join two chapters and pay dues, it doesn't matter which chapter you're in for delegate vote purposes, they can both count you. It doesn't affect your ability to vote as a delegate. You've always been able to vote in one chapter as a delegate and no more, and you can still do that, either one, but not both. So that's really what it's doing.
Any other comments on
that? That's correct, Jeff.
Any other comments on Section 8, Article 8? Let's move on to Article 9, Jeff.
Okay. Whoops. I'm almost there. It left. Went down. It went up a little bit for some reason. Because that's what... That's what occasionally a Braille note will do.
Oh, I know. It jumps everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, I'm on to 8.4.5. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm getting there. Annually from its members. Okay, I'm almost there. I'm on 8.7.
Can't you just look for 9?
Yeah, well, except if I did that, I might find several 9s.
Okay.
Article 9, the Chief Executive Officer and Staff. Section 9.1, the Chief Executive Officer, CEO, is appointed by the board and supervised by the president. The full job duties of the CEO are included in the CEO position description. The CEO is the only employee reporting directly through the president to the board. All additional staff report to the CEO. Section 9.2, all staff of all types and classifications report to the CEO. Selection and termination of staff are generally handled in conjunction with the board president, but the CEO has the ultimate authority to select and discipline all staff up to and including termination from employment with the CCB. All staff adhere to the board staff communication policy at all times. Section 9.3, the CEO is responsible for maintaining internal policies and procedures approved by the board and maintaining compliance with all employment requirements and reporting obligations. The CEO is also responsible for the creation, implementation, and accountability of routine day-to-day policies and procedures required for smooth organizational operations. Section 9.4, the CEO works in collaboration with the board, president, and committees in compliance with the board staff communication policy. Section 9.5, the CEO seeks out negotiates, and manages all contracts and agreements and acts as a signatory for such agreements, except where the president is required to do so. And that's the end of the article.
Comments on Article 9?
Yes.
All right, Ed, I heard your voice first.
I'm going to address 9.2, which is the CEO having full authority of dismissing any employee in the office. I think that should also include, the dismissal should be with the board as well, giving input, not just the CEO. I have concern about that because you could have somebody come in and late and they're a good person and everything, but then the CEO says, no, you're fired, that's it. And I've seen it in public, in retail sales from my daughter, and she said, hey, CEOs can do anything. And I think we're giving the CEO a little too much authority. I think it should be controlled by the board.
Gabe, are you going to?
That one would not be considered a friendly amendment. The committee feels that the CEO needs to have the authority to run the...
Okay, could I make it a motion? I'd like to make a motion that the board also have authority in dismissal of an individual in the office.
Okay, so the motion is that we insert the language as follows. The board shall have, give it back to me again, Ed, authority for dismissal of all office staff, I guess, was that what we'd say?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was second?
Of all office staff.
All right, Steve is going to speak for the committee. Steve?
I'm trying to.
There.
I think there are both practical and legal issues presented by your proposed amendment. Let me speak to the legal ones. First of all, there are legal criteria for dismissal. A CEO is not permitted to dismiss people for improper reasons. You can't dismiss people for discriminatory reasons, and there are all kinds of recourse available to people who are dismissed in violation of law. We have a very detailed personnel policy, as we're required to have by law. It sets out rules for that sort of thing. It sets out rules for granting leave and for a number of other matters. So there's no possibility in the modern world that a CEO could dismiss someone for a discriminatory reason legally. Not legally. That being the case, you're asking, I'm not sure, whether your motion suggests that the board should have concurrent authority or review authority, or exactly what kind of authority you want the board to have. So I'm going to ask you to clarify your resolution. Is it concurrent authority? Is it independent authority? Is it review authority? What level of authority are you asking the board to have?
Let's review authority. I don't want the CEO to have all authority. I think it should be brought to the board for review.
Okay, now the problem with that...
Steve, you can't... go ahead, but keep it short.
The problem with that is there are rules which limit the contact between the board and the staff, and there are very good reasons for that. We have a board communication policy, which you have to familiarize with yourself, but because of that policy, what you'd essentially be asking is for the board to review an action taken about somebody who they have not had direct contact or any kind of supervisory relationship with.
Then do we need policy to create that? Because if we don't have policy, then the CEO can do whatever they want.
Okay, we need to have other people who want to speak on the motion. Frank Welty? No, she was speaking to a different issue. I did. But
I'm going to ask each of you a very simple question. Whether you're working or whether you're retired, let me ask you this. How long would you put up with a job where you had 15 bosses giving conflicting orders to you, meddling in your work, as opposed to just having one boss to whom you reported? Would you tolerate that?
All right. That was in opposition to the motion. I will hear someone speaking for. Christy. Actually, let me ask if anybody else would like to speak for. Since Christy has had a lot of chance to speak, I'd like to give somebody else in the room. No, that's all right, Christy. I'm just checking. Are you speaking for or against, Steve? Hang on. This is not. Is it relevant to this motion? Okay. What's the question?
Someone mentioned the word concurrently. How does
that's not Steve in the motion at the moment. So, go ahead, Christy.
This poor woman. So I have I am really concerned that only one person can hire and fire and make all those decisions when this is our organization. I can tell you right now that I have more than one boss. Where I may have one supervisor, I do have a review, and I'm really concerned because if we have inept and inappropriate work being done, but that person is not. It's not being recognized by the CEO, then there needs to be some other recourse. And so that's why we think this motion needs to pass.
I will hear one more opposition and one. Charlene is speaking in opposition.
Yes, I'm in opposition. It is frequent that in employee duties, activities, their abilities, inabilities are not noted by the general membership or by a lot of things, partially because of confidentiality.
Yes.
So I'm against having the board make that decision. The executive director or CEO is under the control and guidelines and supervision of the president. It becomes, if they're out of line in what they're doing, then the president needs to say, do their job, bring that up to the board, and the board would dismiss the executive director. But we do not see the day-to-day operations of the office and know exactly how people are doing things. You hear it secondhand. We don't see it firsthand. Thank you.
All right. I'm gonna. If there's anyone else in favor... All right, we're going to vote. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Oh.
No.
No.
On to Article... Is there anything else with Article 9? Let's move to Article 10.
Okay. Article 10 amendments. These bylaws may be amended at the annual conference and convention, provided such proposed amendment has been presented to the bylaws committee at least 2 days prior to the day on which the final action is taken. Any proposed amendment shall have a first reading to the convention without discussion, and a second reading at least one general session later, with discussion, if necessary, after which the vote can be taken. That's it.
Does anybody want to speak about Article 10? Article 11.
Article 11 is gifts, bequests, and contracts. Section 11.1. All activities connected with seeking, receiving, and managing gifts and bequests shall be carried out in accordance with the organization's gift acceptance policy. Except as specified in Section 11.4, policies will be developed for dealing with gifts and bequests received prior to the implementation of CCB's gift acceptance policy. Section 11.2, except as otherwise specified, all gifts and bequests shall be administered and managed in strict conformance with the highest standards of fiscal accountability, including Section 11.2.1. selection by the treasurer or by such other official as the president may determine, of an investment manager whose stewardship shall include informing the organization of the benchmarks used to evaluate investment performance, who shall consult with the treasurer or other designated representative in the selection of suitable investments, who shall adhere to a fiduciary standard in the allocation of organizational assets and in the furnishing of advice, and who shall cooperate in ensuring that information and options made available to the treasurer and board are accessible to persons who are blind or have low vision. Section 11.2.2. The treasurer shall report to the board at such intervals and in such details the board may direct or on the performance and other details concerning gifts and bequest funds. Section 10.3. The council hereby provides for the creation of an endowment fund for the purpose of soliciting and investing funds for use in promoting the purposes of the council as set forth in Article 2 of these bylaws. The name of the fund shall be the Newell Perry Endowment Trust. The trust shall be administered by a board of trustees comprised of three trustees. Section 11.3.1. Three trustees shall be selected by the board of directors for the California of the California Council of the Blind. Should a trustee resign or be incapacitated for any reason, such trustee shall be replaced by the council board of directors. Section 11.3.2. The trustees shall serve without compensation. Their duties shall be to accept, receive, and hold, invest, and reinvest contributions to the Newell Perry Endowment Trust with interest thereon and additions and accretions thereto, and such other income that might accrue. Upon the order of the board of directors of the California Council of the Blind, the trustees shall pay out and distribute the earned income for the purposes set forth in this article. The board of directors shall not order the expenditure of the corpus unless an amendment is adopted for that purpose as provided in Article 10 of these bylaws. Section 11.3.3. The trustees shall comply with the provisions of the California Business and Professions Code regulating charitable solicitations and shall file such reports as may be necessary to obtain or maintain approval of the tax-exempt status of the Newell Perry Investment Newell Perry Endowment Fund, California Council of the Blind with the Internal Revenue Service and the State of California Franchise Tax Board. Section 11.3.4, the Council Board of Directors shall determine at any regular meeting whether any or all the trustees shall be bonded and in what amount to guarantee the faithful performance of their duties, or whether any or all the trustees shall serve without bond. If the Council Board of Directors takes no action on this subject, the trustee shall serve without bond, but if bond is required, then bond premium shall be paid from the Newell Perry Endowment Funds, Trust Funds, sorry. Section 11.3.5. The trustee shall account to the Council Board of Directors quarterly, providing such information as the board shall direct. All solicitations and investments shall be subject to the approval or ratification of the board. No expenditure of trust funds shall be made unless two trustees shall sign, therefore. Section 11.3.6, the Board of Trustees, with the approval of the Council Board of Directors, may adopt such rules and regulations consistent with the provisions of this article as they may deem advisable for the administration of the trust funds. Section 11.3.7, in case any funds are donated for a specific purpose within the meaning or use of these trust funds, the taxes and the donor shall be respected. The wishes of the donor shall be respected as far as possible. Section 11.3.8. The trustees shall prepare a report to the membership at the council's annual convention. Section 11.4. Funds received by the organization pursuant to contracts, grants, or otherwise for the conduct of specified organizational activities and to be used within specified periods of time shall be administered in accordance with the conditions and reporting requirements applicable to their receipt, but shall not comprise any part of the organization's gifts and bequests portfolio. That's the end of the article.
Any comment on Article 11? We're on to Article 12.
Okay. Article 12.
Dissolution. Which is the last article.
Dissolution of the council. The California Council of Blind is organized pursuant to the general nonprofit corporation laws of the state of California. The property of the council is irrevocably dedicated to charitable purposes, and in the event of liquidation, dissolution, or abandonment of the council, after providing for the debts and obligations thereof, the remaining assets will not inure to the benefit of any private person, but will be dispersed to the American Council of the Blind. However, should such dispersal not be possible, these assets will be disposed of in such manner as may be dictated by a decree of the Superior Court of the county in which the council's agent for service of process is located. Upon petition, therefore, by the Attorney General or any person concerned with the liquidation, dissolution, or abandonment in proceedings to which the Attorney General shall be a party, with special emphasis given, unless otherwise stipulated in accordance with the laws of the State of California, to contribute such assets to another California charitable organization having similar or identical goals as does this organization. I think I read that last sentence slightly.
We'll forgive you.
Okay. I may have read it grammatically wrong.
Any comments on Article 12? Okay, we are going to vote. So now I need to talk a little. Excuse me? Let me. Artis, do you have a question on Article 12?
No, on the whole thing. I would like to make a motion to table this until the policies are written.
No. Well, is there a second? Is that
technically it's a time? It is a time, so I guess it's not intended to destroy it, so it's not illegal and it's not invalid.
So we just go directly to a vote, right?
Yes.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Vote is overruled. I mean, the motion is overruled. All right, we're proceeding to vote, and the way I need to discuss this a little bit. Do we have volunteers in the room who can pass out ballots? Do we? Okay, we need more volunteers. Now, Frank, are you ready to call the chapter roll? Can you come up here and do that? Frank, you should have known we're voting. Do we have somebody else with a list of the chapters and the numbers? We don't. It's just you. Run. We're voting. No. We're voting today. Yes, Gene?
I would like to ask, do we have a quorum? There's quite a few people have exited over the past hour, and I don't know whether we meet the quorum criteria.
Okay.
Thank you.
We need 50 people in the room, correct?
50 members.
50 members. No, it's we need 10 chap. We need a third of the chapter delegates.
So do we have 50 members?
Are there 50? A member, is there a volunteer?
Lisa.
In there?
Yeah,
I'm doing
it right now. Thank you, sweetheart.
Yes. That's right. Oops, I got to get my badge out.
Don't.
Judy? Yes.
It's a hard crowd.
The individual vote is taken first.
Yeah.
Followed by the delegate vote, after which each officer and director.
Yeah, we all count.
Anyone with a red dot. Wait a minute. I'm getting my red dot. Don't talk to me. I have to get my badge.
What?
Not the committee, just the board. So Steve, for example, doesn't have to. He gets to vote secretly.
We need to. Are there 50 people in the room?
Yes.
All right. I'm assuming there are also 10 chapter delegates in the room.
I'm sure there are.
So, we're going to proceed to pass out the ballots. And here's how it goes. Gabe, tell us who and when votes.
So, according to Article 13 of our current Constitution, the individual vote is taken first, followed by the affiliate vote, followed by polling each officer and director.
So, officers and directors should stand up and not be given a ballot. So if officers and board members, officers and board members stand, volunteers do not give people who are standing a ballot. And if you're not a board member, don't stand until the paper ballots are passed out. Frank, are you back? Have the paper ballots been passed out? All right.
Take it to the end.
Yeah. Okay. Is there, so, have all the ballots been passed out?
Does anybody not have a ballot?
Does anybody not? Who?
If, anybody not
raise your hand if you do not have a ballot. Don't stand.
Unless
raise your hand.
I do not have a ballot.
I do not don't
have
do
a
ballot. That.
I do not have a ballot. Oh.
Thank you. Okay. Are you taking this away from me?
No, I'm just putting it up so you don't have to hold it.
Oh, thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, does everybody have a ballot?
Who's not on the board?
Who's not on the board? Raise your hand if you do not have a paper ballot. Since the committee recommends a do pass, if you are in favor of these bylaws, do nothing to your ballot. Do nothing. If you are in favor of the bylaws, do nothing. If you are voting against the bylaws, tear off one corner.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have my mic.
I heard that.
Yeah. Let me move this glass. You don't have that problem. There you go.
I didn't say tear it in half.
Okay, you got a mic. Frank is here.
Frank.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to let you sit where...
Can
we
get Frank a mic?
Okay. We are now ready. The board members can now sit down until it's time for them to cast their votes. Frank, have we got somebody to tally? Peter. We need somebody to tally. Is Nicole... Is Lisa in here?
Tally if you want.
Can you tally?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so as the chapter's name gets said, you write down, I'll repeat what, Frank will repeat what the numbers are, and you can tally, okay?
Okay.
Great. Okay, tell me when you're ready, Lisa.
I'm ready.
All right. Frank, proceed with the roll, the calling of the chapters and affiliates.
ACB Capital Chapter, 8 votes. Eight votes, aye.
chapter president.
Active Blind Inland Valleys chapter. 5 votes.
5 votes, no.
5 votes, no. Bayview chapter. 9 votes.
No.
9 votes, no. Braille Revival League of California, 5 votes. 5 votes, yes.
They're going to pick up ballots now.
California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes.
5 votes, no.
5 votes, no. California Council of Blind Students, 5 votes. Blind students, 5 votes.
Yes.
California Library Users of America, 5 votes.
5 votes, yes.
5 votes, yes. Contra Costa chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes, yes.
5 votes, yes.
That was
East Los Angeles chapter, 6, 7 votes.
7 votes, no.
7 votes, no. Fresno chapter, 7 votes.
7 votes, yes.
Glendale Burbank chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes, no.
5 votes, no. Golden State Guide Dog Handlers Incorporated, 5 votes.
5 votes, yes. Ah, you didn't get my vote.
5 votes, yes.
Be quiet, please. Order. The delegate has cast the vote.
Greater Bakersfield chapter, 5 votes. 5 votes, yes. Greater Los Angeles chapter, 6 votes.
6 votes, no.
6 votes, no. Inland Empire chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes, no.
5 votes, no. Orange County chapter, 5 votes.
Orange County
chapter, 5 votes, yes. 5 votes, yes. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, 5 votes.
5 votes, yes.
5 yes. Redwood Empire chapter, 5 votes. 5 votes, yes. San Diego Braille Club, 5 votes.
5 votes, yes.
5 votes, yes. San Francisco chapter, 7 votes.
7 votes, yes.
7 votes, yes. San Gabriel Valley chapter, 8 votes.
8 votes, no.
8 votes, no. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, 17 votes. 17, yes. Solano County Chapter, 5 votes. Yosemite Gateway Chapter, 8 votes.
We're ready to poll the board, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, we're ready to poll the board. Artis, can you do that? This requires a 2/3 vote. Artis? Artis? Okay. She should have started. Oh, you still have a ballot? If you still have a ballot, please.
Raise your hand if you.
Who has ballots left?
Artist, shall we just try to construct it? All right. No, you need a mic. Does Artis have a mic?
Okay. Okay. Judy?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Gabe?
Yes.
Artis? No. Peter?
He's not in the room.
Okay.
Jeff is next.
Okay. Jeff?
Yes.
Okay. Paul Patchy Jr.?
Not in the room.
Okay. Pam?
She said no.
Oh, okay. Okay, Pam, okay. Charlene?
Yes.
Okay.
Is someone recording these votes?
I am.
Okay.
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 Alinda?
Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
Lisa, sure.
Sarah.
She'll get him.
Okay. What's the last one? Oh, Vivian?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm missing one other person.
Is there another board member in the room who hasn't been called yet?
There is one.
We know that. Is there another board member in the room who has not been called yet?
There is one.
Karen.
Karen, okay. I knew I forgot somebody. Okay. Karen, okay.
No.
Okay. Okay, that's it.
Is there any other board member who has not been polled?
You've got 8-4 with 3 no-shows. That's 15.
Lisa, do you have, there's 8 board members in favor, 4 against, and 3 absent.
I'm sorry, what was that?
There were eight board members, 4, 4 against, 3 absent.
One way or the other.
Yes. Do you have the tally? Do you have the
result? What's the percentages?
What are the percentages? Hang on. Mm-hmm. Now, what percentage is 71 of 206?
No, the percentage well, 4. What's the need?
Oh, my God.
What's the
need? 66%. All right. The count is 135 for, 71 against, 66%. It passes.
No.
No? No.
66.6. It fails.
It
has to have 60.
That's 66.6.
We need
it fails.
Peter. Okay.
It fails.
No, it's defeated.
What's the exact percentage?
Yep.
Yes, it is defeated.
Yes, barely.
What's the exact percentage?
What's the exact percentage?
It would need 142.
That's correct. That's correct.
Wait, what is the individual vote?
Was it 206 divided by 1?
What is the individual vote?
Or no,
no,
we need 143 votes to pass.
Could somebody come with it? 5.5.
Okay. It's defeated. All right, we are... No, no door prize. I'm ready to adjourn. Anthony, do you have something significant before we adjourn?
Yes, I want to give a lot of credit to the Bylaws Committee for working on this.
This session is adjourned.